We're currently faced with a crisis in Christianity, a life and death struggle between orthodoxy and heresy, between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults.
The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The prosperity gospel, it's nothing short of a wholesale transformation of Christianity. It's the glory of the cross supplanted by the glory of consumerism. It's a fast food Christianity. It's long on looks, but it is dreadfully short on substance.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can register at issuesetc.org. Don't miss the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
So if you went to a university and you believed something that the professor believed was wrong, you would be expected to try to hold your own. You've gone from there to education as emotional and personal validation.
Because you oppose the intentional killing of an innocent human being in the womb, you are responsible to take on all kinds of other issues. Now, Todd, nobody else gets hit with this.
What we believe about marriage is related to who we think Christ is, what Christ does for his bride, the church, what the church is, how Christ possesses his bride, and what he does for her.
A very secular understanding of sin, where sin is not you rebelling against God, sin is you participating in the psychological oppression of me in some way.
This retired Lutheran school religion, science, and math teacher loves to listen to and continues to learn from Issues Etc. And on March 14th, I still love a good-sized piece of pie. 3.14159265.
Well, they came and went without me noticing, and I was fairly well aware that I had to do at least one or two interviews about the Academy Awards. I didn't even find them on television, didn't know that they were on. I wasn't the only one. Many people missed them without really missing them. They just found out the next day, oh, they held the Academy Awards. CNN reports this year's Oscars got the lowest ratings in the show's history, a 20% drop from last year. And there's a related story in the Washington Post on an Oscar-winning animated short, but not a lot of media press. What's the media's narrative for the low ratings and for the fact that, well, they came and went and a lot of people didn't notice and didn't really care? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly will join us here for the first half hour. We'll talk about media coverage of the 2018 Academy Awards. Then we'll spend some time with Pastor Paul McCain in our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We're in part 8 of the Apology of the Augsburg Confession. Today we'll discuss baptism, the Lord's Supper, and confession. At first, they don't seem to disagree. Of course, there are disagreements looming in the background. We'll find out what they are. Dr. Angus Manoj will round off today with part one of an interview on nihilism. We're going to talk about that worldview that once you hear it described, you'll recognize it. You'll see it in the world around you, a view of the world that there is no truth, that knowledge is unattainable, and essentially, everything around us and we ourselves are meaningless. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the 2018 Academy Awards, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
When the producers sit down to put together this enormous production of the Academy Awards, it's in planning for probably years, and the production is an enormous undertaking. Who are they putting the show on for?
Well, I think the safe thing to say is that there's two different audiences. The first thing is that there's the audience in the seats there at the theater, and then there's some awareness that there is an American public. And the question seems to be whether the goal is to entertain the American public, inform the American public, or at times maybe even inspire the American public to go out and see some of these movies that the public may or may not have already gone to see. In the last decade or so, the chasm between the films that Hollywood loves and the films that the American people love has been getting wider and wider. So that there's a little bit of an element that the broadcast is kind of like a class where the point is to teach America what America should be doing with its film choices. But then you get back to the dynamics that you can't deny, which is the dynamics of the people in the room. I'm reminded of a saying that I heard years ago when I first moved to Washington, which was that Washington is the world's largest and most powerful high school, and that all of the dynamics that you would see in a high school in terms of tribalism and jealousies and everything is played out in D.C. on a daily basis. And then there's an angle to that. There's another old saying that politics is movies for ugly people. That basically everybody in D.C. is trying to become a star to some degree. They have to be considered funny and witty and attractive and emotionally compelling in terms of how they sell their messages. And as America more and more evolves into a nation in which entertainment is far more important than actual ideas, we've seen this take over in our politics. Republicans don't like to hear me say this, but to some degree, Ronald Reagan, by his sheer ability to communicate at the level of a popular culture figure and his ability to kind of be that quiet, stoic, but witty, heroic figure like a movie star, to some degree, Ronald Reagan pushed American politics further into the world of entertainment than anyone else. And the problem for the Republicans is they don't have anybody else that's attractive and entertaining, funny, witty, and winsome. And so then now we have, of course, the current occupant of the White House also knows a thing or two about entertainment, which is one thing that there's no such thing as a bad review if people read it and go, watch your show. Well, then you have L.A. Well, if D.C. is politics for ugly people, what is L.A.? Someone in Los Angeles, active in Hollywood, once told me, we see Hollywood is the world's most powerful middle school, and that it's more driven just by sheer emotion and massive desires to be reassured and to be affirmed and to be liked and to be loved. Summed up just for many by that classic moment at an Oscars where Sally Field waved her Oscar in the air or clutched it. I can't remember which gesture she used, but she said, "You like me. You really like me." And that just burst of honest emotion that she felt affirmed is really what the Oscars is all about in terms of the dynamic of the stage to the audience. So the live show is Hollywood expressing love for Hollywood and what Hollywood values. The TV show, to some degree, is Hollywood saying, come on, America, like us, really like us. And the problem is that more and more that hasn't been the case in recent years, symbolized both at the box office and, as you mentioned, the fact that this was the, in terms of TV ratings, this was the least viewed Oscar broadcast. Surely this is in the modern era, not dating back to when televisions hardly existed and only moments of the Oscars were on. They've got to be talking about when the entire Oscars ceremony itself was broadcast. So the least popular of the modern era, I think, is a safe way to say it.
So how do you account for the fact that not only were fewer people watching it, but it came and went, honestly, if were baseball season completely underway, I could be completely excused for not knowing the Oscars were on, because that's all I'll watch on television.
But they have baseball in St. Louis?
Yeah, they have some actually, at one time, very good baseball.
I'm well aware of that. I think it's the greatest baseball town in America. My own personal conviction. But go ahead.
We're still in spring training, and I'm kind of searching around. My wife is busy in the evenings. I'm home alone. I'm searching around for something to watch. It came and went without my notice, and I'm not alone. I saw social media covered with people saying, hey, there were some sort of award ceremony last night. How do you account for that?
Well, here's the big one, the big question. How many, they've opened up the picture of the movie of the year award to be a much longer list to try to include a greater amount of diversity. How many of the pictures nominated for Motion Picture of the Year have you seen?
None.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and I'm a guy who at one stage in my life paid extremely close attention to popular culture, especially while I was teaching it in a seminary in the early 90s. I was teaching popular culture studies. I mean, I think that says a lot. So the divide between the world of kind of video game populism comic book movies and the world of the small, artsy, edgy, pushy, doctrine-driven Hollywood films, the chasm has gotten huge. And in the middle, there's kind of an entire normal American audience of people somewhere between 40 and 60. I'm now out of that anyway. But somewhere in the middle age group in middle America in flyover country. And it always shocks Hollywood every couple of years when there's some sort of relatively clean, low-budget film that all of a sudden they look up and it's made $300 million. I guess one of the most analyzed ones of all time was Home Alone. Decades ago, and a decade and a half ago or so, maybe a little bit more than that now since I'm old, My Big Fat Greek Wedding was another example. And you get these movies that are made for almost no money, and then all of a sudden they're huge hits, and people in Hollywood are kind of going like, what's the matter? The way it was explained to me once when I was interviewing a Hollywood producer is that in the digital age, Hollywood is worried. Hey, I'll put this in a baseball term for you there in St. Louis. He said, we're worried that there's going to be nothing in our industry now between singles and grand slams or home runs. And a single is obviously kind of an independent audience, niche audience, targeted audience, smaller film, sometimes called an alt movie or whatever, alt market. And then the grand slam is like we spent $150 to $250 million on this film, the special effects. It's got big box office names. It's one of the 64 comic book movies that have currently been greenlit for production in Hollywood. You know, video game playing young males are going to be watching this around the globe several times. And maybe if we put a female character at the front of it, maybe we can get them both to go. But the goal is to be a grand slam because you've invested millions and millions and millions of dollars. Now, how many of those grand slam movies did you see up for major awards the other night?
As far as I could tell, only one or two, and those were for visual effects.
Exactly. They're over in the technology section, not the emotions linked to the awards that really matter. And so because there's nothing in the middle, we hardly have any big pictures that connect with the American public. And when they do, let's take a classic example would be Forrest Gump, which is no one's idea of a brilliant movie. It's held up pretty well, and nobody could decide whether it was a liberal film or a conservative film, but it was very clear that the people that made that movie knew that there was a big, broad, diverse, multi-age American audience out there, and they were shooting at it. And how did Forrest Gump do at the Oscars?
Well, I'm going to take a guess that it probably won Best Picture.
Yeah, it did well. I mean, and that's one of Tom Hanks's Oscars, if I remember correctly. I know he was nominated. But my point is, do you see what I'm saying about the middle vanishing? And when you go into the world of niche film, now you're talking about extremely artsy, extremely violent. And you have the saying from about soon after everybody was trying to figure out why The Passion of the Christ was such a big hit. And all of a sudden, Hollywood started trying to make movies that evangelical Christians might want to go see, even though almost every single person involved in The Passion of the Christ was Roman Catholic. But I wander away from the point. There was this saying in Hollywood for a moment that born again is the new gay. And what they meant was that Hollywood had discovered that there was a gay audience, so there was going to be niche films targeting the gay audience, and maybe they could cross their fingers every once in a while and do some low-budget films for the born-again audience. I mean, you know, one's 3% of the population and the other's 35% of the population, but anyway, you get the point. They've been trying ever since to figure out, what can we do to please the born-again audience? I mean, other than occasionally distributing films made by Baptist churches in Georgia, what can we do to please that audience without feeling too bad about ourselves? Perhaps the film that got that formula better than any other was The Blind Side, in which they made a film about a really good story that just happened to have Christian faith in it, and they left about half of that Christian faith in it, and it connected. And what a lot of people failed to note about that is they went simultaneously after the white church audience and the African-American church audience, because it had a prominent role in it was related to issues of race relations. And that movie was a huge hit. They just can't seem to figure out, what do we do to get to second base and third base? Not putting those in dating terms at all, but what do we do to get to second and third instead of just having to settle for singles or big budget home runs? And Hollywood is really mystified by that right now. And they have been for, gosh, two or three decades. And now with the move to binge watching by cable cutting millennials and everybody else and the power of HBO and the BBC format for entertainment, which is you hire big stars and then you make, in effect, a huge movie that you break into like six nights. That's something BBC has been doing for a long, long time. And America is beginning to realize, hey, maybe that's the future to second base and third base. It's not on the big screen at all. It's home on the increasingly enlarging digital screen. They're in the family room. Dare I call it the family room? Just the TV room, the man cave, the woman cave, if those are going to become a thing. I'm rambling a bit, but do you see the dilemma here? The Oscars essentially are about the first base films that Hollywood loves. The films that are about the niches that they feel most comfortable with and that they most want to affirm as normative. And then the big video game movies hardly ever win, or at least they sure haven't in quite some time.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the 2018 Academy Awards when we come back. What's the media narrative about the Oscars' poor performance in the ratings, since there's a political affinity between the media and Hollywood? I'm sure that narrative has something to do with Donald Trump.
What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Kanagraff of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the 2018 Academy Awards and the media coverage of it with Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Pop culture is one of those places that if you want to talk about a godless culture, you will find example after example in all of the media that it produces and the culture that it spins off. That godless culture is part of the subject of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Embracing Godly Character, the Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. You can find out about this book at our website, on any page of the website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Embracing Godly Character. Terry, what's the media narrative then for the Oscars' poor ratings performance? I imagine because there's political affinity between the media to a large degree and Hollywood, the Hollywood elite, that narrative must have something to do with Donald Trump.
Well, that's why the other night, and this was the point of the piece I wrote about this at Get Religion, whether they knew it or not, toward the end of a lengthy piece about the Oscar ratings, the Washington Post kind of stumbled into the fact that it's not all about Trump. I mean, that while you have all the shots at Trump and the shots at Trump and the shots at Trump, in terms of storytelling and in terms of morality, Trump isn't the only person in flyover country that is powerful or has attractions to some people. I keep saying this over and over. I know lots and lots of people who voted for Donald Trump, but I only know, I met one the other day, it was amazing. I only know one person who wanted to vote for Donald Trump, one or two at the most. And so how does that translate to the Oscars? Well, to some degree, these are people that could say, well, yeah, heck, you can attack Trump all you want as a person, as a man, even as a politician. But what happens then when you start attacking the Trump voters? Or what happens when you start attacking religious motivations and morality, primarily on issues related to sexuality? And in effect, what happens when the Oscar award show turns into kind of a tent revival for evangelists who are reaching out to young viewers in particular, trying to get them to come to their revival meetings at theaters and hear all about the religion of various and sundry forms of the sexual revolution and whatever? At that point, that's a different audience of parents and others turning off the Oscars as well as the people with Trump stickers on their pickup trucks or their the back of their cars or whatever. Do you see the point I'm making? It's like Hollywood wanted to say, we're here to bash Trump. And boy, oh boy, do we know that's going to make people mad at us. And once again, the media missed that there's more to be mad about with Hollywood's recent forms of evangelism of the American public for its worldview. There's more to it than Trump. And that there's an entire other audience that has stopped going to movies for the most part. And a whole other audience that has turned off the Oscars. The folks that do the Tony Awards, you know, New York Theater and all that, the Tony Awards people seem to have a better awareness of the fact that they have a niche audience. And they seem almost more aggressively comfortable with that, symbolized by a tremendous opening number by Neil Patrick Harris a couple of years ago, who has hosted the Tonys with spectacular success a number of times. And they had this huge opening number called Broadway. It's not just for gays anymore. And it's like they knew what their image was with the American public, and they knew to make fun of it and try to kind of attack it while at the same time saluting it. In other words, we're from New York. We know that. We know you're not you, and dang it, we don't care. And gosh, can we sing and dance great.
I have a theory about that. And I think the Tonys are more self-reflective because those people have to actually face faces in the audience. They live and die by people buying tickets, not by what the, you know, the box office isn't always whether or not they sold tickets. It's whether the theater bought the movie to show it. And those, they are more literally audience dependent. They have to be in touch with their audience, even though they may completely disagree with them.
Yeah, but then at the same time, Broadway exists in a very specific zip code, which means it is New York for New York. And then, of course, a huge part of it is tourists to New York. But do you think out in middle America, out in Iowa and Texas and all that, do you think a certain types of person gets on the plane and flies to New York to see a show and others don't? To some degree, the Tonys are self-reflective because, you know, in the classic real estate formula, location, location, location. Hollywood is a very definite location. Yet its theaters, the audience to which it must appeal, are all over America. And you can't hit it big if you're striking out in red zip codes and only appealing to blue zip codes. Once again, the niche audience gets you to first base. It doesn't get you to second, third, or a grand slam or a home run.
There was a piece in the Washington Post, Oscar-related and religion-related, that you wanted to talk about briefly.
Yeah.
It's an animated film dealing with the Day of the Dead called Coco, and the kind of the narrative story has to do with the afterlife. What did you find there, Terry?
Well, I thought it was a beautifully written and very candid confession by a reporter talking about the fact that, you know, she did not consider herself very traditionally religious. It's Michelle Bornstein, a veteran religion writer for a long time at the Post. And this is an analysis piece, not a news piece. But she opens up very bluntly with why this movie about death and dying, why it really connected with her and left her just, she said, left her in a puddle of tears because it connected with her with events in her own life and her own losses within her family. And reading that review, I was reminded of something that the screenwriter and Professor Barbara Nicolosi Harrington, who's an interesting person, she's a former Catholic nun who became a screenwriter and is now married and teaches in a number of different settings. Barbara has a blog and she about film and about the role of film in America. And the name of her blog is Church of the Masses. And she's hearkening back to famous statements a long time ago by Capra, the maker of It's a Wonderful Life, that he said one of the most important things that Hollywood people must realize, if they've been granted the power and the responsibility of preaching to people for 2 hours in the dark. And all of that is language that the church simply can't ignore. Yet the church ignores it for the most part, other than screaming about the occasional movie that the church wants people to avoid or wants to attack. The church is silent on the role that entertainment plays in the lives of ordinary and millions of Americans in terms of being a place where they take their hopes and fears and, in effect, sit down and watch parables, whether they know they're watching parables or not. That's why I talked about this last summer at the Issues Etc. conference and made an appeal that I continue to make, which is someday some religious denomination is going to wake up and realize this. And they're going to wake up and realize that technology and entertainment is a huge factor in the homes of ordinary Americans. And parents need to think about that. And young people need to think about that. When I was teaching at Denver Theological Seminary, I rolled that all up into a series of questions, which I wanted MDiv students to think about before going into ministry. And my three questions were, how do you spend your time? How do you spend your money? And how do you make your decisions? Now, if you ask those questions about the lives of ordinary Americans and you don't run into the power of television, movies, popular music, and the internet, who are you talking to?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, we continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We'll be in part 8 of the Apology of the Augsburg Confession, talking about baptism, the Lord's Supper, and confession with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House. How did Christian communities in the past respond to godless cultures? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Embracing Godly Character, The Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Embracing Godly Character at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Embracing Godly Character, 1-800-325-3040.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Are you on the road to paradise in the southern Puget Sound area of western Washington, but looking for a traditional liturgical Lutheran congregation in classical Lutheran elementary school? Parkland Lutheran Church and School in Tacoma, a member of the Evangelical Lutheran Synod, is the place to find our Savior's rest on Sunday mornings and Monday evenings. Visit our website at parklandlutheran.org for service times and downloadable sermons. Preaching, teaching, and distributing Christ and Him crucified every week.
Smartest listeners in radio.
You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC RUCAM. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADC, RUCEM.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.